In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
I've never, ever in my entire life looked at Charlie Puth and thought, this is an attractive person. Not because he's unattractive, but like not in that way. But like, also, I get it. He's white and alive. So like, off queen, you know, like we get it.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this episode has been years in the making. That's right, the singer-songwriter Vincent is here, and I'm not too cool to tell you that I've tried to get him on for at least 2 years now, but it finally fucking happened. I think I first fell in love with Vincent's music. He has a song called Higher with Alex Newell. You all know Alex from The Glee Project, just did Shucked on Broadway. I saw them in Once on This Island on Broadway. So Vincent works with amazing people and continues to do so. Fun fact, he went to Berklee College with some very famous queer and queer allied music stars. So of course, I forced him to talk about that amongst a lot of other things. Before we get into it, though, I just want to say thank you for buying that sweet, sweet merch. It launched on Monday of this week, and thank fucking God all four designs are being sold. It was a little scary, Mary, because I did not do drop shipping this time, meaning I actually bought the product, put it into our home, and then just like cross my fingers that I wouldn't have 200 shirts sitting there forever. But people are buying, and shout out to my husband, Matt, who is not only shipping up those packages, but he's also dealing with his office being completely covered in shirts that say Fagatrini, Protect Character Actresses, Girlina, and Body Hair Advocates of America. That last one is obviously my favorite. There's a horny picture of Tom Selleck looking hairy and stunning. If you want to get yours and clear out our office, buy them at gayasspodcast.com. And speaking of other gay assery, the Gay Ass Sex Diary coming out this week is delish, but it's coming out a couple days later than normal because of the merch madness. So you'll see it on the Patreon in the next couple of days. But just know this episode is anonymous, and he is a tall drink of water that I've had a crush on for over a decade, who used to be sort of buttoned up, and now he is a big, huge slut. So check that out at the Patreon at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. But enough of that. We're getting into this episode with the pop sensation Vincent. Wait to hear about the lesbian that made him gay, his friendship with Meghan Trainor, of all people, dating wishes were manifesting, and I force him to spill some tea on JoJo Siwa claiming that she invented gay pop. Bless her heart. Enjoy. Holy cow, Vincent is on. That's a gay ass podcast. Vincent, I don't know if you know this, but I've been a fangirl for many a year, and I cannot believe I'm staring at your very, very gorgeous face.
You did one. Thank you so much. Really working on the skin regimen over here. That means a lot. Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here.
It's the skin is skinny. Can we talk about, do we have a product that we're living and dying by?
Paula's Choice toner every day of my life.
Okay, hashtag ad, hashtag, okay, I've been reading, so many people have been posting, like, Trenton Nowin, people are posting all of these things, and I have a bit of a retinol regimen, but that's it, and now I'm nervy.
I truly have no, like, clues for, like, how to get good skin. I walked into Sephora one day, and this woman was like, you're black, you should put this on your face, and I was like, sick.
When we thank her, and we thank her.
Every day.
I also want to thank you for being born and say happy 33rd. It's your Jesus year.
It truly is. I feel resurrected. I feel new. I feel like that girl. It's really great.
Well, she is risen. And I do want to ask you for your first official interview question on this gay ass podcast. This being your Jesus year, what are we manifesting? What are we trying to visualize?
We're manifesting proving the bitches wrong. We're manifesting really upgrading the entire catalog. We're manifesting a man at some point, but hopefully a man that will just come on the weekend and leave during the week.
We want a man on Saturdays and Sundays, hon. We got shit to do. M2F.
Exactly.
Well, that sounds like male to female, but I also meant Monday to Friday. But we love, you know what I have to say? I am fully married to a man under the government's rule, but as much as I love being married, I do miss the days when you had a break from just like being able to be alone in a home, you know? Like, again, lo love this man. I'm so lucky to be with this man. But there's something about that period of being with someone where you get to say bye-bye and then miss them. And then when you reunite, oh.
No, for sure. My mom had a day, I think it was Thursdays, where she would literally tell my father, I'm going in the basement, because she had decked it out for herself. She goes, if you then I'll kill you.
Sure.
I'll murder you.
And you know what I love about that? It's giving girl cave. It's because I always bristled against the man cave idea. I'm like, the
Yeah.
whole world is your cave. Like, you're already men, especially straight men who want that cave, are already put on a pedestal. But girl, I think girl cave, we have girl dinner, and we deserve girl cave.
Exactly. And she made hers, and she made sure that he never set foot.
Thursday is her day. This being your Jesus year and you trying to manifest that we are telling the haters, proving the haters wrong, you posted something that I really loved recently about Queen Bee, especially regarding her Cowboy Carter of it all. You had this really amazing post that said, like, labels and executives told you essentially that your voice maybe fits the genre of pop, but it's not your look. And you were told to either change your sound or write music for other people that essentially want to do what you do. And you were giving props to Beyoncé for, like, proving the haters wrong, forging her own path. So is this part of the Jesus year journey?
It is for sure a part of it. And I think listening to Gabba Carter really set the tone for how I'm going to be walking into these rooms for the next couple of months. It's just what an amazing experience to listen to something that someone was told they couldn't do and making
Yeah.
it at the top of their game and being so influential in it and giving other artists the opportunity to look at themselves and see themselves in a way that they always have and know that they could do the thing they wanted to do.
Yes. I have to say, just to be clear, I have now seen you perform at Pride in LA. I have been a fan of your music for a while, and I think that while, of course, you're still trying to prove the haters wrong, try to, you know, what's the word they say about the Doors?
Pushing, kicking down the doors.
Kick the doors down. I feel like I'm watching you have you've done that for years now, but I know that there's always more work to be done. And I think that you are an inspiration to me because I view you as a part of this like queer music group of people that is saying fuck you to the rules of the industry. And I think that's like you're creating the space for yourself. And I'm sure it's been sort of an uphill battle, yeah?
It definitely has. And I don't want to paint the narrative that it's like I'm spending this next year being like, I'm going to prove you wrong, because like,
Yeah.
I'm on bomb. I don't have to prove you wrong. Now I'm just going to do it really, really well and enjoy myself, because I think having the idea of like, I'm going to prove the people wrong is like, well, then you're just giving them the power. And it's like, well, no, sis, I'm playing the shows and you're in the audience. So I have the power. So I'm just going to have fun now and make really good music that I enjoy without any notion that I have to be anything other than my queer authentic
Oh my God, breathe it in, girlies. I'm breathing that in
self.
because I, you know, not to get to therapy so early on, but I think that I've been really reckoning lately with like, I think I was projected a certain low self-esteem vibe when I was growing up. And I'm sure part of it was like the gay of it all, the where I grew up of it all, whatever. But I feel like I'm constantly talking myself off the ledge of like the you're not good enough ledge and onto the like you know you've always been that girl, but if you don't know that, then how the hell is someone else going to? And that to me is like still a daily battle.
Yeah, it's the RuPaul of it all. Like, if you can't love yourself, how are you gonna love anybody else? And it's just like, babe, the girls aren't thinking about you, if we're being honest. Like, they have their own problems. And I think we put ourselves into this category of like having to fight past just being acknowledged as human beings. So when we get to the thing that we love the most, we're like, well, we have to be this because that's what it looks like. And it's like, no. You can just be you doing what you love to do, and I promise they'll love it.
Well, that is so gorgeously said. And I'm going to ask you now the first official gay ass podcast question, which is, Vincent, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Top of my head, Lucy Lawless, aka Vina. I have no qualms with what she has done to me and how she transformed me into an Amazon princess warrior. I used to watch Xena every day. Like, I could speak the episodes, like, verbatim. It's unhealthy.
I have to tell you that it's been a long time since someone has given us a Princess Warrior ref, has given us a... I mean, what do we say is her, like, catalog? What is her category of woman? Is she... I mean, princess... She's not... Is she superhero? Do we say superhero?
He's, like, superhero, demigod. Amazon queen, also lesbian icon, also fighter for every queer right in America and beyond, also hater of Kevin Sorbo, which is also an amazing thing in my book, which I
Did you, growing up in Philadelphia, like, what, she just happened to come upon your screen and you said, that dyke is mine?
Remember Logo? Rest in peace. Or, I mean, she's still out there, but she came on Logo for hours. I mean, like, and I was like, oh, there's a gay network. I can watch this, and my dad can come and watch and not be like unsure of what's actually happening here.
Oh, yeah.
But then he was like, these two women are kissing. You're into that. And I was like, yeah, I'm into that.
I fucking love when girls kiss, dude.
Maybe there's a chance.
Oh, man. Well, it would make any young queer person confused because you're like, I love how badass this lesbian is, but also I can't imagine you were thinking about kissing her. You're probably more thinking about, like, I want to wear the gorgeous...
I wanted the fit. I wanted the wig. I wanted the shock room. I wanted to be involved. Okay? I wanted to be her.
I'm really embarrassed to ask this question, but is Lucy still with us?
She is. Wow, crazy question for you. I'm actually done.
She's fully 56 years old. Yeah, I'm like...
She's so young.
I'm just going to... She's fully, like, she's like 29 and a half. I'm like, is she alive? She's 56. She's 5'10", if anybody's wondering. And
so looks exactly the same. She's thriving.
She does look great. Wow. You know what? Sometimes I can edit out a dumb question, but I'm going to keep that in. That was a really, you know, I'm a proud dumb person, and I'm going to keep the question in. So we send her all of the good ang. We send her thanks for making Vincent queer Lena, because Lucy Lawless, is she queer IRL?
I don't know. I never really looked into it because I didn't want to be disappointed. I mean, either way, I'm going to love her, but I just didn't want to know. And then I recently found out in past years, because Kevin Sorbo, who plays Hercules, got online as like uber Republican, like out of his mind. And she was like, hi, you're an idiot. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You were always that girl.
Well, I will say, when you do look up Lucy Lawless queer, it does give us an immediate reference to her appearing at gay pride events. She supported same-sex marriage publicly and was given an Ally of the Year award. So regardless of if she's flicking anyone else's bean, she is making us feel seen. Thank you.
Mine.
Hello. Bling, bling. I'm trying to make the sound effect of a bean flick. Bling. she did appear at the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, which you, Vincent, also recently appeared at. Can we talk about it?
Yes, for sure we can talk about it. I love Australia. I used to live there maybe 10 and a half years ago. I like left high school randomly in the middle of the year and went to live in Adelaide, which is like a very quiet church mountainy town. Don't ask. She was on her journey. But
sure.
Went back recently this year with my friend Adam Lambert to perform a little ditty that we have on the way.
Well, I have, of course, been doing some creeping on the interweb, and the song from the snippets I got from the Instagram stories, honey, it sounds absolutely divine. And I have to say, so the song is called Another Lover, if I am correct. And I have to say, when an artist is able to perform Down Under, to me, that is, there's no real making it, quote unquote, but to me, like, performing in Australia, it feels to me like you've made it. I don't know. You're like, you're out of the continental Americas, and you are in a completely different part of the world where, if we can talk about it, the men are stupid hot.
Let's get into it. Let's unpack it and get into it. Here's the thing. They're all 6'4". They're all,
I mean,
insanely warm and kind. Like, I'm walking on the beach and people are like, hey, do you want to come have a drink with us? And I'm like, I will get pregnant. Like, that's why.
Yeah, you're like, what am I slurping down, hon? Because give me a
I will, I'll mess up this family if I have to. I will be involved. I love Australia. And I think I just have like that Kylie Minogue mindset where it's like, we love America and America is amazing, but also like Kylie's like, I'm an international superstar and if I can do this anywhere, I can do it anywhere. So being able to perform anywhere outside of America is always like, I like flex in my book because I'm like, girl, who would have sunk?
Who would have? And I also want to reference, like, to me, it's like when you can make it happen in Australia and then if you can make it happen in London, to me, it feels like, oh, yeah, we're just doing a little stint across the pond. But I, being an interviewer, you went to Adelaide in high school. Were you out at this point? Were the Australian boys able to have any V?
I came out at a very young age. I think I was 6. So I was already like, mommy was out and about.
God.
Yeah, she just had, you know, and she had no problem telling the girl. I mean, Australia was fine, but I think I went more so just to figure out my mind.
Mm.
You know, I was like, really, I have a big family and there are lots of personalities and I had to just step away from what America was because it's not great for people who look like me and people who live our lifestyle. And it's just needed that little break. And so it was really beautiful just to go somewhere and just be a human being and like learn how to like build shit and be a person. You know, who would have thunk?
I'm sure that was so important to your development as both a human and an artist, because like we were saying before, like you need to be able to respect yourself as a human to know that you deserve to create art and deserve to make something that affects people. And I'm sure that reminding yourself of your worth, especially in a completely different setting, would have been almost like a pre-college before college.
Yeah. It was definitely a thrust into the real world and what it's like. And it was, I don't know, Australia's different. I mean, every country, I think, and place has its problems. But I didn't feel as pressured to just be a human being there. It was like, God, just live and like be happy and like don't hurt anyone. And I was like, great. That's nice.
Great, 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 great. Well, it's also interesting to think about the difference between you growing up in Philadelphia, you're raised Baptist, your father was a gospel singer, and then, of course, Australia is so different. But like, what was the coming out as a gay person that young with a religious background? Because I'm sure it's different for every person who is a part of any religion. So what was it like for you?
I think for me, it was a bit easier because my parents weren't so focused on what I was going to be doing as with my life as opposed to what I was doing with another person. My mom really never brought home the idea that who I was with mattered, just as long as I brought home someone who had like a good heart and like a good mind and wasn't an idiot, because my siblings would rip them apart. And so it was not the easiest because my dad did have a background in Christianity. And while he was one of the most influential people in my life, he also understood that he had raised another human being who made their own decisions and was not going to be beholden to what he thought was right. And my dad was like, he's a triple Aries just like me. And we argued all the time, but I was like, I'm not going to back down. And he knew that. And it was like, cool, we get it. You're a little mean. Like,
we see each other.
Bury that.
Very
well, energy.
There's also something so gay about gospel choirs, if I can say that. There's something, because there's like the loud, the beautiful loud sounds, the it's a certain pageantry to me. I have talked about this ad nauseum, but when I saw the movie Sister Act 2, even as a young Jewish kid, I was like, there was a very "we see each other" vibe of it all. And I like, there was something about these like songs about Jesus that somehow connected with a girl like me who had never been to a church. And I think that like that gospel, there's something there.
The church is theater. Yeah. It's theatrics from beginning to end. My girl comes in a full garb. The girls come in hats. The nails are done. Everyone's on point. They sit in certain places based on classes. And it's theater. And it's all with the idea that at some point we're all going to come together to witness this one thing. And it'll make us hopefully lighter and easier throughout the day to like get through life. But it's theater and it's supposed to be this spectacle. And I think, how could you not relate to that? And especially if the music's good.
Hello. Oh my, it's so good. There's actually a moment I'm thinking of if we combined the Judaisma of it all with a gospel. Have you seen the movie Keeping the Faith with Edward Norton and Ben Stiller, where they each play like a rabbi and a priest?
And they're fighting for this one girl, right?
They are fighting for this one girl. And there's a scene where I guess Ed Norton is at the church doing his thing. And then they bring in a gospel choir. Oh, that's what it is. They bring in a gospel choir to the synagogue. And the gospel choir sings a Hebrew prayer song, but fully done as a gospel song. And you should have seen the way my whole puckered, my eyes crossed. I was like fully losing my fucking mind. It was stunning. And that to me was like, it's a great movie. And I think that it should be, let's bring it back.
I mean, like, I'm here for the reboot, but only with the original actors. I'm tired of seeing new people ruining.
Yeah, let's keep it OG. You know, I do love to talk about the movies of it all, because your music has been featured in not only some pretty stunning queer films like Down Low with Zachary Quinto and Lucas Gage, but you also, your music's been in Love, Victor, Queer Eye. I think that's obviously a huge deal when that happens, but I want to ask you a controversial question.
Talk to me.
Vincent, you get to choose any movie star's film to feature your song. Who are we choosing?
Oh, this is the easiest question I've ever been asked. Sandra Bullock. Well, well,
Sandra Bullock. Okay, kombucha girl, kombucha meme.
Well, if not Sandy, then Meg Ryan. I grew up a movie fanatic and like a rom-com freak. And so most of the things that I write about are inspired by certain things that have happened in movies and also in real life combined together. I'm such a Meg Ryan freak and Sandy Bullock freak that it's just like, it's insane.
We really were gifted with so many perfect films by those two women. I mean, Sandy for me was one of those people that, I don't know if we call her a character actress, but every character she played, I felt like the mother word is overused, but it would always give mother. Like there was something about her
every
in Miscongeniality that, you know, she's trying to hook up with, what, Benjamin Pratt? Is that his name? The like most stunning
Jesus
drink
Christ,
of water
insane.
You've ever seen. But then she's also like giving us a makeover montage where she's got, you know, hair everywhere. She's a New Jersey broad and then gives us just like, she serves cunt.
She's her quintessential woman. Okay.
Mm. Do you remember in Miss Congeniality, the Michael Caine character of like the gay, you know, pageant judge? I remember rewatching it recently and like not loving the dynamic that they had between him and Benjamin Pratt, because like the whole joke was like that he was skeezing on straight,
yeah,
and like the gay guy was like gonna try to fuck the straight guy, and the straight guy was like, oh, that's the only complaint besides that movie is perfection.
Hated that he's like made to be this like older creepy man where it's like, hi, you're all gonna get old one day and someone's still gonna be hot to you and you're gonna want to be like with them, so like give it a rest. But then I also watched Michael Caine and all his other movies and I was like, wait, this is you on the right. I'm like, just who you are, sister. I hated the little narrative that they tried to paint there, but I love at the end where he just realizes that he's just like an idiot and he's like, oh, you're a dumb, and so I'm just gonna read you for the rest of the movie.
That part for sure. Is there, what's like the Meg Ryan film that really does it for you, or that was like really spoke to you growing up?
City of Angels, babe. It's City of Angels, Nicolas Cage, craziest looking man I've ever seen on television. Perfect for that movie. Perfect. Perfect. He is definitely what I expect an angel in that category to look like. That makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah. I have to say that I saw that movie probably in the 90s when it came out, but not since. And I could not tell you a single part of it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, right. Wow. I mean, it came out in 98. I might have seen it in 98.
Yeah.
The story of Seth, who is Nicolas Cage, an angel who wanders the Los Angeles area invisible to humans. God, we love a good invisible angel. That was a big thing in the 90s. Like, there's a Whoopi Goldberg film with Gerard Depardieu called Bogus.
He's the imaginary friend, babe. You're talking to a girl who loves a movie. No, I know.
Oh my God. Yeah. A car accident leaves Albert, Haley Joel Osment, orphan. So he goes to live in New Jersey with Harriet, Whoopi Goldberg, his late mother's adopted sister. When the two of them have trouble getting along, Albert copes by befriending Gerard Depardieu, a friendly, caring French magician who happens to be a figment of his mind. Ugh, we love an imaginary friend. Do you have an imaginary friend growing up? I definitely did. I mean, I was that gay kid that was just like, I spoke to the tooth fairy last night, bitch.
I feel like I definitely did. I definitely had one, but he was insane. Like, he got me in a lot of trouble, for sure. I remember repeatedly getting yelled at by my aunt and my mother about, like, he told me to do this, and babe, this is just what it is. Deal.
Sorry, auntie. It wasn't me. It was Gerard Depardieu. Now, speaking of other celebrities, your first like big splash in the industry was when you sang Creep on the Four, this like amazing music competition show that it's so funny to think back of when that show aired. Fergie hosted it. The judges were Diddy, DJ Khaled, Charlie Walk, and Meghan Trainor.
Yeah, insanity, babe.
That's insane.
The confused look on your face is how I was every day that I walk on set. What am I doing here?
But then you fucking, like, the way you sang Creep, I mean, it is, I was looking at the YouTube clips and there are still people commenting like, I found this on TikTok, it's the best version ever. It's like, the fact that it can, like, withstand the test of time for a song that a lot of people have covered. I mean, that song is, like, to me, one of those, I know it's not, like, a band that was, like, the, you know, a bunch of faggots, but, like, it's a very queer song.
Very much so. I think the reason I chose it because I felt out of place in that environment, because it was like, when you just read it out loud, it's Fergie, it's Charlie Walk, Diddy, DJ Khaled, and Megan. And I'm like, what is going on in here? Like, what are we doing? And why are we all in this enclosed room with like 300 people screaming like we're in a gladiator movie? It was the weirdest thing I've ever done. And I think I remember being up until 2 that morning doing like BTS shots for them. And I was so tired and I had gotten sick, and they were like, hi, you can either sing this like Casey and JoJo song. And I was like, that's just not gonna happen, sister. And not because I don't love Casey and JoJo, but I was like, I'm not singing All My Life right now. I feel crazy and I can't do well with that right now. And so I was like, I'm gonna sing this, and brought this little arrangement in that I found from The Voice. There's a singer that sang a version of it on there, Kim Nicole. And I was like, hi, can we kind of switch this up and make it a little bit more theatrical for this version? And Ricky Minor was the band leader, and he was like, sure. And I sang it for the producers, and they were like, great, we'll do it. I sang it. I was going to do this once, and then I'm going to sit down. Because it was the last day, and I was like, I don't care to win. I just want to sing this song, make my mom and my dad happy in Philly, and go to bed.
And then you sang it and it fucking killed. And Diddy was like, you know, it's the first person that gave him chills. And like, what ended up there, actually... well,
for me,
especially right now, I mean, he's not thriving, we'd say. But what do you feel about singing shows now? I mean, obviously with The Voice, American Idol, like, do you think that is, if you were to talk to someone that's like, Vincent, I'm a singer, I'm a songwriter, I'm an artist, I want to get visibility, do you think that is the best way, is to try to get on one of those shows? Or would you say it's a different path?
I think it's one way. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the best way. I will say, when I did mine, I had already been in LA playing shows, and like, I had sold out the Troubadour twice, and I was like, I'm doing it. But the gravity that television holds, like, within a night, like, my phone broke because people were following me so fast, and it was heating up.
Wow.
So it's know what you're doing and know what you're getting into. So before you get on there, have some shit ready. Like, we had songs ready. And I was like, cool, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to leave. And that night, I think I posted my single. And I was like, hi, please go listen to this. Because they didn't know what they were doing on the show. And I didn't have to sign anything. And I was like, stupid girls. Here's mommy's chip. So it's like, it's not the best way, in my opinion, because there are a lot of politics. And it's television after and at the end of the day. So while it is fun and cool to be on TV, just know that if you go on television, whatever you say is going to be used, whether it's for you or against you. You have a platform now like TikTok. I don't know how long it's going to be there, but build it yourself. You know, there's there's no one in the way of you getting to an audience.
Well, I think that's sort of the most difficult part of the industry right now. And it could apply to music. It could apply to comedy. It can apply to writing. It's that there are so many different ways to get visibility, but it's very difficult to choose what to go all in on. And also, like, to know when you're ready to do that. I think when I was younger and I thought I was ready to have whatever levels of success, I definitely wasn't. I mean, it's such a different world, but I famously, yet no one knows about it, was called back for the Book of Mormon on Broadway, and I was very
casual,
not
flex.
Casual flex, but the flex that quickly beautifully crashes and burns is that I was so not ready and just did so badly in the callback, and I just, like, of course thought that my life was over and the world was gonna crash around me. But like, it's so hard to actually know when you're ready. And clearly when you did the four, like, you had the single ready, you had all these shows in your herstory. So it seems like you really were smart with strategizing the way you were going to harness that visibility.
I think, yes. And I also had a manager at the time who was very, very vigilant, being like, listen, we can do this and this makes sense, but we have to do it the right way, because we have to just capitalize on it, because all it is a starting point. The rest of it is truly you. Like, I don't think people understand when they get into any of this, like, it's cool to be on all these things, but that only lasts for the first 15 seconds. The rest of it's like the year after of you being like, I have to work so hard that I think my feet may bleed every night, but also it will pay off if you keep it up.
Well, that's the fucking trick, I think, is just staying in it and consistently reminding yourself that the hard work is worth it. I read you also knew Meghan Trainor before doing the show. What's the backstory on you and Meggie?
My best friend Mario Jose knew Meghan from Berkeley, but we all went to college, and we sort of had ran into each other a couple times before that. He was always so sweet, but when I got on the show, I mean, I didn't tell her I was going on the show or auditioning for it. So when I hopped up there, she initially goes, she's like, oh my God, I know you. And I was like, girl, shut the fuck up. You're not supposed to do that. Like, I don't know how that's going to go. But like, she has always been so sweet. And even after the show, she'll like text me and be like, hi, I love this song. Thank you so much for putting it out. It's so cool. She's always been the most supportive person. I think people don't understand like how talented she is as an artist. Like, all those songs, all that production, that's her. That's her sitting in her house and writing all that. And like, she wrote for Britney Spears. She's written for numerous artists before she became Meghan Trainor. And just, I love her as a human being. She was the most supportive one on that show for sure.
That's amazing to hear. And you know who that also reminds me of, who I've read that you love in regards to the writing for other people before really stepping out on her own, is Jessie J. She, to me, is like, I remember, I think it was White Room that I saw like a YouTube video of her. Yeah, singing. She was like singing some like in like some like small venue, and I remember hearing her voice and just like, you know, I'm a gay girl that not only loves a pop singer and song, but to hear that belt come out of her, and then learning that she had written for so many artists before putting out stuff under her name, that to me is like a part of the music industry that I don't claim to know about, but I think it's so interesting about how many different paths that songwriters take, and there seems to be so many nuances to how to get your shit out there.
It's such a pain in the ass, but it's fun. It's fun. We love it. But it's
as
like
blood comes out of your eyes.
This crying blood. I think she's been like at it for so long and just done so well. She started off as a songwriter, obviously writing for the people, and did Party in the USA from Miley, and like, have you ever heard her cut of it? It's so cool. But she is like your quintessential artist who like has the voice like that is timeless and has these amazing songs. And I think she'll be around forever because he is the kind of artist who was like, I don't really need anything else other than to stand on stage, write my songs, and sing the shit out of them. I love that.
I do too. I also love when you see like a random video pop up of her on some like Asian singing competition show and she's just
destroying.
Like,
Destroying.
I'm like, where is this documentary about Jessie J's journey? Like, why are we...
And she just had a baby. It's insane. It's like, and the baby's so beautiful. It's she's super sweet. I got to meet her last summer and we talk now on Instagram and she's like,
oh my God.
It's very kind. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? It's just so It does and it doesn't, but it does. I just like it to me is the beauty of a girl like you who has chased the dream and then found yourself amongst all of these other people that are incredible. I mean, the fact that you went to college also with like Betty Who and you were just like, you know, I picture you going down the school hall, going to your music composition class. And the next thing you know, you're both like fucking performing at like huge stages. And it's
so strange. Yeah. I mean, like it's me, Jess, Betty, MJ Rodriguez, Charlie Puth. We were all in the same class. We all knew each other. It doesn't make any sense how we're all like doing our own respective things. I mean, it makes sense. That's why we did it. But it's just really cool to watch and see how all the work turned into like actual lives. And it's just...
Well, when you're crazy. In school, I think it's very easy to think that, sure, we're studying this, but will it actually amount to a career? Will it amount to actually making things? But you know I'm going to have to ask, and I'm going to not apologize because it's in my horny DNA, but Charlie Puth in college, was he as hot as he is now? What was the vibe?
I am always gagged that gay men find this person attractive because Charlie is just Charlie. I've never, ever in my entire life looked at Charlie Puth and thought, this is an attractive person. Not because he's unattractive, but like not in that way. But like also I get it. He's white and alive. So like all queens, you know, like we get it.
Listen, he has harnessed an armpit shot that I said finger licking good.
No, Charlie is one of the most amazing musicians and human beings. He's so sweet. He's so tuned into what he's doing. So like no lie, when we would all be in school, he would just be making things and like for fun and it'd be some of the best songs we've ever heard. Like Charlie is a great human being. I'm just always gagged at, like I'll go to a bar and Kim and are like salivating and I'm like, what's happening? Call your mothers.
I think it's also I think it's also like a part of it has to be the talent crush of it all. I mean, it's like he's like, you know, and also the like sheer ingenuity of this fucking twink going on TikTok and be like, I just turned the light switch on and then all of a sudden you turn me on. Like it's like, come on, like that, we call that marketing. We call that multi-level geniosity. And like, but the fact that he can do that in a way that I'm not annoyed. Like that to me is
it's not cringy at all. It's like, because he has to
pitch. It's not
perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're like watching a genius at work, and then he's also a cutie patoot, and the voice is voicing, the light switch is switching.
And the girls are turned on, and I get it.
And the girls are turned on, just like the light switch. But you know what? I'm going to turn us on to the next gay-ass podcast question. Vincent, if the world was ending... You could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
One character actress. Miriam Margolyes.
That is such a gay answer. And the question is already so gay. But congratulations for coming on the faggiest podcast of them all and giving us... Can you tell me why she popped up in your brain? I mean, obviously, lately I feel like she's had some like really beautiful... moments in the press, but is there a film that you look back on? Is it like a clipping from what is it?
James and the Giant Peach, for sure, where she played one of the evil sisters. He is also just a hilarious human being.
She is so, and also you can't help but look at her and just be like, not only are you comedy queen, but like, I'm just looking at that gray big old hair, and she is a quintessential character actress because she's outspoken and so. Yeah. Oh, and her partner's name is Heather Sutherland. Not me finding that out live.
He's a full lesbian, babe.
Full. And her partner has a PhD, which I feel like even up levels the lesbianetry of it all. Wow. Okay, I'm gonna ask you. Let's quiz, Vincent. It's time for Miriam Margulies trivia. How old do you think she is?
I feel like she's 67.
82.
No.
Not me thinking Lucy Lawless was 104 and you thinking Miriam Margulies was 15 and a half. She's 82. I know. And you know what? If there's anybody who's going to live forever, it's Miriam Margulies. She was born in 1941, hun.
Ooh, breathe.
I love this answer, and I love to look back because when you look at her, not only her career of all of the films that she's done, which she's done like 300, but she also has some interesting heritage. She grew up in a Jewish family, which shout out, we love that. And her grandfather was born in a small shtetl in Belarus, which at the time was part of the Russian Empire. Okay, who cares? But it's also just like, it's cool to see. We love the history. Also, this is a beautiful quote. She represented Newnham College in the first series of University Challenge, some show in 1963, and she used the word fuck, and apparently she may have been one of the first people to ever say fuck on British television. God, that's a good claim to fame.
It's just iconic all around.
Well, and if I may also reference, there's new gay-ass merch that just came out, and one of them says protect character actresses, and I feel like we should edit it to let character actresses live forever, and Miriam Margulies, get her the immortal pill, bitch.
Exactly. I think she already took it. She takes, like, she eats an onion a day, like, raw. It's crazy.
Again, a quirky 82-year-old character actress. Stick it in my veins. Well, that is a stunning answer, but it is also a part of my job as a gay-ass podcast host to bring up another controversial female pull quote, which is one from Miss JoJo. Now, JoJo, of course, recently said that she goes, I want to start a new genre of music. And they said, what do you mean? And she said, well, it's called gay pop. Well, there was quite a lot of outcrying, justifiably so. And then when people were like, girl, what are you talking about? You started gay pop? She's like, well, no, I'm not the inventor of gay pop. For sure not. But I do want to be a piece in making it bigger than it already is. I want to bring more attention to it. Vincent, what's your message to JoJo?
Well, just to be clear, this is not JoJo Lee, Get Out JoJo, because that is an icon, and we're not going to...
Sorry, yes, JoJo Siwa.
I mean, like, love her, happy for her, that she, like, wants to do something good for the community, good for her. I think it's really funny when she said it, everyone who has ever made any pop song who happens to be gay was like, hey, sister, it's it's us, it's not you. I mean, like, good for her. Just, like, don't be... What can I say? The girl walks around with, like, everything on her face. So, like, do your thing, sister. I mean, I'm not going to tell her not to do it, you know? She's a young, quiet woman in America, and she's going to live her life and be as outlandish as she wants to. I just hope that when she does it, she has fun with it. She makes really good music when it comes out. I haven't listened to it, but I think that's not true. That's not true. I've listened to it. My friend Julian Brudinski made me and another friend go to her listening event in West Hollywood the night that it came out. And it was the eve of my birthday. And I remember sitting inside, I'll send you the video. I remember sitting inside of this restaurant, Rocco's, as JoJo Siwa is like 10 feet away on stage screaming this song. The song is fun. The kids loved it. I don't know about her being like a CEO or CMO of anything gay pop, but I'm happy that she's there, and I'm hoping that people listen and then go and find other artists like Tegan and Sarah and Betty Who and Manny Carey and Cakes the Killer and me and like people who have been doing this for a bit. So That's my dream.
That's well said. I think it can only bring more attention to the gay pop of it all that absolutely has existed for quite a long time. It does bring to mind though, like, I don't know if you remember Sam Smith, who accidentally misspoke at the Oscars and was like, I'm the first queer person to win an Oscar, which was like, I think it comes from a good place, but then unfortunately, if there's going to be any group of people that tells you that you're not correct, it's going to be gay people.
Yeah, I think it sucks because it that's also a team thing, being like uneducated about the situation, because someone could have told them before they got up there, they're like, hey, not the actual tea. But I think also young and having a really amazing moment in front of a lot of people. And so you say the first thing that comes to mind. We have all been there and we understand it. And it's like, what are you going to say to someone who can fill a club within like 10 seconds of a can't drink and is like singing her song on stage? Like, that, let her live in her moment and let her enjoy it and hope and pray that she's going to be the doll we need her to be.
I agree. And also it is important to remind ourselves that she is fully 20 years old, and it's almost a miracle that she's gotten this far with this being one of the bigger scandals of late for her. It's like, you know what, if I was a newly out queer person at 20 with that big of a following and painting my entire face and torso, and then I say invented gay pop, at least it's not, you know, something.
It's not pretending to be a Nazi, you know, like we're doing well.
Exactly. She's doing... totally unrelated, but there's a Brandy Melville documentary that just came out, and Brandy Melville, we watched. It is, the like founder like had a private chat with all this like Nazi referencing. It's like, girl.
Crazy. Gigs. 15-year-old working around to like 2 a.m. It's nuts. Nuts,
and they're fully making $450. The final thing I want to grill you on before we have to end this episode soon is you sometimes hop on twitter.com and give us really beautiful either tweets or retweets, and there's something I love to do sometimes, which is pull up hot takes from people's online presence. And you recently retweeted, "The open relationship gays go on more dates than the single gays, LOL. Vincent, how do we feel about open relationship gays?
I think it works. I mean, people probably hate my Twitter presence because I don't get into it with anyone because I just don't have it in me, babe. I don't care. I don't know you, so I don't care enough about it to like go forth and like rage against you on the internet, because that seems like you need to see a therapist. But
yeah.
When it comes to that subject, because I have a lot of friends who are in open relationships, I think if it works, it works. It's communication. I am always gagged about the girls who are like, oh, you're stealing everyone. Oh, help us. Mm. And it's like, shut up. There are a bunch of people in the world. You're in one small pond. There's a huge ocean out there. Go make it work for yourself, but don't blame someone else who you don't know, who you've never met, about what they're doing with their lives. It's insane. It's like, read the room.
I think that if you think that there's an issue with your dating life because of other people's actions with their dating lives, there's a disconnect with how we are approaching the setting.
For sure. But also take into consideration, you're not taught at a young age as a gay person how to date, who to date, what's right, how to flirt. If flirting this way is weird or aggressive, if flirting this way is going to put you in danger. So you don't really know. So a lot of men that I have met have grown up with the idea that how they have functioned in the world is somewhat the right way, because there's no wrong or right way to do it, but there's a healthy way to go about it. And most people don't know that. And like, that's therapy, and that's talking to someone and having friends who can help you with that. And most people don't have that. Some of the girls don't know, and so they get in their feelings about it.
And that, I will say, like, having to, when you come out and then having to like go through the elementary school phases of dating as a full, for me, that was like my college years. I was like, I had a huge crush on the first boy that I kissed. And then literally the day after we had our first kiss, we were supposed to go on a date, and then he canceled because he didn't want to be in a relationship. And it was fully me living a first grade dating scenario. I like was absolutely failing through the elementary school relationship. And then it's just, you do have to play catch up and then learn healthy dating practices, which it is not easy. And that is a good point.
It fucking sucks. My college dating experience was awful. I was in Boston. Like, it was tough.
Doof,
you know?
Doof, doof.
And I went to music school and it's tough.
Can we then do a full circle moment and can we try to put out into the world what Vincent is looking for and deserves for a lover or a partner or a Saturday Sunday girl?
For sure. I'm looking for someone who has their shit together, if I'm being honest. Someone who knows how to be their own person would be ideal. I'm not really looking for you to come into my life and change my world because I've done a really good job of constructing it and making it good, but just hold yourself accountable for your own decisions. Have a job. Be nice to animals. You know, take care of yourself. Take care of me sometimes. I'll take care of you. I'm not looking for you to like change my life, but like just enjoy it with me. I sound like one of those old 90s TV like things that come on at 12 o'clock at night.
It was very voiceover. It was giving voiceover. And that is a skill to possess. And honey, you booked. Well, Vincent, I have had a beyond stunning time talking to you. The wait was worth it to have you on this podcast. Before we officially sign off, the final question I did not prep you on is, if Lucy Lawless, our gorgeous lesbian, made you gay, what is keeping you gay today? Is it a pornography? Is it a Sandy B? Is it a character actree?
What's keeping me gay? The fear of being straight.
Bloop.
Oh God!
You know,
can
it's
you
just
imagine?
really fear. Just honestly, I have not sat and asked myself that question, and thank God because I shudder. I shudder at the thought. Look at us. Thank God we are here and we are queer. And thank God you, Vincent, grace our planet with your personality, your musique, and your beautiful soul that is gay. Tell us, Vincent, where can we follow you and what should we look out for?
You can follow me on any platform. My name is V-I-N-C-I-N-T. I'm the only one that pops up with that spelling because I think I'm unique. And what's coming up next is new music. And, can I say this? When does this come out?
This will be coming out like April like 17th, so like soon.
Great. New music next week.
Yay! Woo! Okay, well, I'm going to obviously be linking all of Vincent's stuff in the description and tagging and all the things. But Vincent, truly an honor. I cannot wait to see you perform again around this globe and listen to this new fucking music. Mazel tov. Thank you for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast with Vincent. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you did, tag us on Instagram. I'm at Eric Wills or at Gay Ass Podcast. And on the Instagram, you'll also find that sweet, sweet merch. The four designs are Fagatrini, Girlina, Protect Character Actresses, and Body Hair Advocates of America. Get those at gayasspodcast.com. And if you are curious about our upcoming guests, I just want you to know that we're hitting our stride, y'all. And next week is a big one. I'll see you then.